From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
House Resolution 1025 calls upon us to establish the opportunity for a graduated for a progressive income tax in the state of Illinois. I think that Adam Smith said it best. He said that taxes should remedy inequality of riches as much as possible by relieving the poor and burdening the rich.
This is not a matter that is going to be on the ballot. This is more, I would say, rhetoric. It's more class warfare driven. But if they were going to be sincere about their efforts today, there should be a message coming from either the Speaker or the nominee, Pritzker, about what the rates are going to be. Other than that, it sounds nice, and let's beat up the rich.
Paul Vallis had a hug for the woman chairing his campaign committee, followed by some choice words for the man whose job he's now after.
People don't like the mayor. Sorry, they don't like you. You know, you're a bully. You intimidate people.
Right now, a new political controversy has developed over the crisis at the Quincy Veterans Home, where 13 veterans have died from Legionnaire's disease.
Comptroller Susana Mendoza and candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker, as well as other Democrats, are outraged that Senator Tammy Duckworth's name surfaced as someone to blame for the Legionnaire's outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home.
The governor and his people are incapable of ever acknowledging or taking responsibility for their wrongdoing.
Well, some harsh criticism of the Rauner administration by the state controller, Susana Mendoza. The Quincy Veterans Home story continues. Questions remain on what to do about the facility where Legionnaire's disease has contributed to the deaths of 13 people. Also, plenty of discussion about Illinois moving from a flat income tax to a graduated tax. And Paul Vallis is back in politics running for Chicago mayor. We're going to talk about that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Joining me in studio, Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And joining us from Chicago today, Tony Arnold and Dave McKinney. They cover government and politics for WBEZ Public Radio. They've been on top of the Quincy story. And gentlemen, thanks for joining us once again.
Sean, thanks for having us.
Dave and Tony, I'll let you start here. First, I think it'd be a good idea to lay out the problems, if you could, regarding the Quincy Veterans Home. This goes back a few years.
Well, yeah, it goes back to 2015, and that's when there was this just kind of out-of-control outbreak there where people were getting sick and dying from this waterborne illness. And the thing you should point out about Legionnaire's disease, I mean, it's a preventable thing. I mean, you can prevent it from, you know, making sure your water system is purified. But then on the back end, if somebody gets sick with this, typically antibiotics will treat it. And so those things were obviously not working there in Quincy, and the whole thing blew up there. And it's become this real problem for Governor Rauner because, you know, in spite of spending about $6 million to upgrade the water system there and put in new testing protocols, people kept getting sick. They got sick in 2016. They got sick again in 2017 when there was a 13th victim who died. And then in February, there were four more people who got sick. And so, you know, at this point, we're now kind of in really the fourth year of this. And it's, as I said, a real anvil around Governor Rauner's campaign here. He's got to get it under control. And this week he proposed a package of proposals to do that, $245 million, a quarter of $1 billion to build an entirely new facility there, to get a new water supply. And in the interim, buy an abandoned nursing home nearby that they could retrofit and upgrade to move people in while construction continues.
Well, Tony, a lot of people have discussed this over the last few years and different ways to approach this problem. Is it really the only way to do this, to just tear down that facility, pull out all of the plumbing and start from scratch, or is there another solution that could even be cheaper?
Well, I guess, first of all, it's been found that a main perpetrator for the people getting sick has been these old water pipes there on the Quincy campus. And so I think there's been some logic about how do you tear out those pipes, replace them, and not disrupt the lives of the people who are living there, who call this place home. So I, now that they've been looking at this issue here the last several months, with a few new commissions on just the infrastructure of the facility, and also just, you know, the water at the place itself, they've come to the conclusion that just ripping up the pipes isn't enough. We should build a whole new building while we're at it, because the next generation of veterans are going to be looking to stay there are going to have different health issues than the ones who are there currently. Veterans from Vietnam, or even in the future from Afghanistan and Iraq, will probably have more mental health needs than the ones who have been living there traditionally. And they're saying that they're going to need a different type of a building altogether to address that.
Charlie, the governor has done everything from going to stay at the Quincy Veterans Home for about a week and living there and seeing firsthand what was going on, and then also having this more comprehensive report put together that came out this week. But has his response just been too little too late?
I don't know if I could say it is too little too late, although I was among many people who suggested, you know, months ago that maybe what we should do is find temporary housing while we try and settle this problem. But it is a situation that I think, as the WBEZ reporting showed, could have been dealt with at the onset with a greater sense of urgency, notifying people's families immediately rather than waiting several days, that sort of thing. And I think, in my mind, what we need to do now is stop blaming people or looking for people to blame, and for the legislature and the governor to just get together, pass an appropriation to fund a new building, and get going on it.
And Dave, what's the status on that? I know that the legislature is supposed to be in through the end of this month at least. Is there any movement out there? I believe J.B. Pritzker has even said, hey, they should act on this plan.
Well, yesterday Pritzker was asked about, you know, do you have any concerns with what the governor put out? And, you know, he didn't identify any kinds of red flags to him, and he urged action on a plan. But, you know, we're talking about doing this in the heat of a very heated political cycle. And, you know, a governor who has had difficulties working with the Democratic-led legislature and has not gotten a lot accomplished because of the fighting. And I think there could be motivation on the part of Democrats to try to slow walk this and keep him kind of twisting in the wind during the summer. But there are risks in a strategy like that, where if something happens over there, more people get sick, or God forbid somebody else dies, then, you know, a whole new round of finger pointing begins. And, you know, if Democrats don't give him what he wants, then I think, you know, he's sort of empowered to turn this back on them and say, well, wait a minute, I have a plan here. What are you guys not doing approving it?
And I would add to that, too, when you look at how legislatively lawmakers have been dealing with this issue since our reporting came out, began back in December. Most legislation that's come up related to the Quincy home has passed unanimously. There's been bills related to notifying families of outbreaks on campus. There's been bills about getting an audit of what happened. What did the administration do? Did they act appropriately? And also of raising the bar. Right now, families who are suing the state for neglect because their loved one died from this outbreak, they're entitled, the most they can win is $100,000. And there's some legislation out there to raise that amount to $2 million. So and so far those bills have gotten bipartisan support. They're still in the legislative process. They haven't gotten to the governor's desk yet. But I think what you're seeing is a different type of approach to spending $245 million for a new facility there.
Well, we had this situation, going on now for several years, actually. And, of course, a lot of the reporting that both you and Dave did here over the last few months has even brought it to more people's attention. Then we had this report come out this week. At the same time, we have an email that is made public, and this comes from Governor Rauner's Deputy Chief of Staff, Darlene Singer, former state lawmaker. She's also running for statewide office right now for controller, and apparently seemed to raise the possibility that the Quincy outbreak, maybe there was a way to tie it to the previous administration when the now U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth was in charge of the Department of Affairs. Is this Veterans Affairs? Is this a big issue? Is this a big deal politically for the governor? Is this just one of those things that's, you know, going to run its course and we'll forget about it?
Well, I mean, I think the email is kind of a portal portal into the thinking that was going on in the administration at a key point in time. I mean, this coincides with the first report that we did in December, where, you know, we were the first people to really kind of give voice to these families who explained, you know, kind of the horrible circumstances of not knowing what was going on as they were watching their family members get sick and die. And the fallout from that was intense. And within about a day or day and a half is when this email string comes out. I mean, the state senator from DuPage County, Tom Cullerton, who has been leading hearings into the Legionnaires outbreak after our coverage, he proposed early on, almost immediately after our story back in December, that there be an audit by the Auditor General's office about what these outbreaks, what happened with them. And so internally in the governor's office, they were circulating this news story. And then at one point, Darlene Singer, who was the governor's legislative liaison at that point, weighs in and says, as you point out, maybe we could tie this back to Tammy Duckworth. Duckworth is the Democratic U.S. Senator, of course, and she was the state veteran affairs director from 2006 to 2009. And the problem with Singer's thinking there is that you know, there were no confirmed cases of Legionnaires at the facility prior to 2015. A lot of that has to do with there was not really any consistent testing going on, and really a lot of ignorance there about, you know, what is a case of pneumonia? Is it Legionnaires or is it just viral, you know, a viral pneumonia? What is it? And so that was the strategy there. But this has really blown up in her face. And we saw yesterday with the state comptroller, Susana Mendoza, and J.B. Pritzker and several other lawmakers putting Singer on the spot and saying, you know, listen, you've got to apologize for this because, you know, this is evidence. When Republicans are blaming Democrats for playing politics with this, this is about as raw of a political turn as you can take, you know, where you're trying to blame this on the Iraqi war veteran who was injured badly in a helicopter crash in Iraq. So it's blown up in her face, and so far we've not heard Singer apologize. But I think that this is going to keep going on until we hear something like that.
Charlie, is this just politics, though? I mean, politicians all the time are looking for a way to spin it a certain way. Is that what this is?
Well, yeah, that's what Singer was attempting to do, figure out a way to deflect blame away from the Rauner administration and place it on the Pat Quinn administration, the Democratic administration, prior to Governor Rauner taking office. And it's politics when there's talk about maybe Democrats not wanting to move ahead with doing something to deal with the situation so that they continue to bang Governor Rauner with it. And to be honest, I would say a pox on both their houses if they're so small-minded and so committed to slash and burn politics that they can't rise above it to take care of our veterans. I think that is absolutely disgraceful.
Well, we'll see what happens because, again, the legislature scheduled to be in through the end of the month. We'll see if they decide to take any action there. Something else that got a lot of attention this week, there was a House hearing on it, was the graduated income tax. Some call it a progressive tax. Also, some call it a fair tax. And, Tony, you covered the hearing. Why is this getting attention? Why is this being pushed right now?
Purely for political reasons is the short answer to that, because it would take a constitutional change to the Illinois Constitution to enact this graduated income tax, and the deadline has come and gone this year to get it on the November ballot. So the question, I think yours is a good one, why would they bring it up now when it can't get on the ballot? Voters can't decide on this year. And while it is a big part of the Democratic nominee's campaign, J.B. Pritzker, he's been calling for this. It's equally a big part of Bruce Rauner's reelection campaign, which is saying this is nothing more than a tax increase, and this is something that he's fought against his entire tenure. So they had this hearing, which is really just a resolution that would say it'd be nice to consider this in the future, and they had there was Republican lawmakers lined up to tee off against the proponents of moving to the state from the flat 4.95% income tax rate that comes out of your paycheck and my paycheck right now to more of a graduated system that would change how much in taxes you pay based on how much money you make.
Charlie, you wrote about this just recently for Illinois Issues. You looked at the fact that J.B. Pritzker, while he's been pushing this idea, has not put forth rates, so it's really hard to determine how this would impact everybody. At the same time, there was a study that was released this week. The Center for Tax and Budget Accountability put out their study. I believe it said, at least under one scenario, about 98% of taxpayers would see taxes either stay the same or go down. So why isn't Pritzker acting more on this?
I actually have no idea, because it seems to me the way to put an end to all this criticism that the Republicans are leveling, that, well, what it really means is that taxes will go up for everybody, would be to lay out a schedule, as the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability did. The criticism of their schedule is, well, it only raises $2 billion in addition over and above what we would normally get. And our needs are so much greater than that. But on the other hand, if you're arguing against any tax increase and then you're objecting to one that raises $2 billion because it only raises $2 billion, that strikes me as kind of contradictory. And the devil is in the details, as they say. If we adopted, for example, the same tax structure as in Missouri, people would pay less. If we adopted Iowa's, people would pay more. And but I should qualify that. The household at median income, a couple with two children, would pay more under Iowa, would pay less under Missouri. So until you actually see specific rates, you can't say that this plan automatically would cost people more or cost people less. And I think one thing that people get confused on, the rate you pay isn't based on your total income. Whatever the graduated level is, J.B. Pritzker and I would pay the same amount on my salary.
Up to a certain point.
Right, up to a certain point. And since his wealth is a lot greater than mine, he'd go on and pay additional percentages for different levels.
I think you just had the understatement of the year. His income is ahead of yours there, but
yeah.
Well, Dave,
no, he probably makes in 30 seconds what I make in a year.
Oh, yeah.
Dave,
well, Governor Rauner too, for that matter.
Dave,
yeah.
You've covered this issue before. It's been tried. In fact, Democrats had control of the legislature. They had the governor's office for a long time. If they're such big proponents of this, why didn't they do it then?
Well, yeah. I mean, what was it, the 2016 election cycle or the 2014? I can't remember which it was, but there was an advisory referendum that was put on the ballot that fall that you know, wanted to impose a millionaire's tax. And of course, it passed overwhelmingly. But yet, where was that? You know, it didn't pass both chambers. And you know, I think, as we've seen, not only Democrats, Republicans do the same thing. They will try to get these things on the ballot to encourage turnout and interest in the fall. And I think this is, you know, I agree, Charlie. This is a devil in the details kind of thing here. And you know, I just pulled up like the rates in Iowa, for example. I mean, we pay, you know, the flat rate in Illinois here for individuals, 3.75%. You know, in Iowa, if you have a, you know, taxable income,
4.95%.
That's right. It reverted up. That's what it had been. But the taxable income in Iowa, $47,000. You're paying a 6.8% rate. It goes higher, the you know, to nearly 8%, and above that, the higher you go. So I mean, there's a chance you could, you know, an average middle income person could wind up paying more than they're paying now in Illinois, I guess is what I'm saying. So Republicans are ready to pounce on this, as they should be, and Democrats are reluctant to give us the details so we can all analyze it and see how people would really do.
Yeah, and it's not enough to look at the rates. You also have to take into account the exemptions and the deductions. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that a median household income taxpayer would pay less in Missouri. Part of that is because Missouri has very generous deductions and very generous exemptions. So basically, the taxable income for that median household income in Missouri would be roughly not just slightly more than half of what it would be in Illinois.
Tony, you mentioned political reasons is why we're seeing this right now, maybe beyond fiscal reasons. But at the same time, a lot of progressives say they would like to see this tax, this graduated income tax put in place. I wonder also, do you think that some of the reason it's being talked about a bit is because if they can come out and say, hey, we think it would actually lower your taxes, the average person's, coming right off of a point in time where they raise taxes again, do you think that that's a reason to try to offset that argument a bit to say, especially as people run for election this year, that they're going to get hit with the fact that they raise taxes?
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the biggest talking points for both Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker in this campaign. While everyone in the state is paying, 4.95% right now of their paychecks, for people with lower incomes, that could be going down again once it depends on the rates that Pritzker releases or wants to go, and on him winning also. A key part of what he's been saying too is while we wait for the Constitution to change or this campaign to take off for the 2020 ballot to potentially change the Constitution, then he would also, to Charlie's point, would enact all these different exemptions as a way to try to create a form of a graduated income tax in the interim. So his point is that you wouldn't have to wait several years. You could get this going right away. But again, we don't know what the rates are. So and so to your point, we don't know if people would be in line. A certain percentage of the population would be in line for a tax reduction, while others would get a tax increase.
I mean, one thing's for sure, though. Like, if Pritzker does wind up winning and both chambers of the legislature remain Democratic, then the onus is going to be on the Democrats to get this state's finances in order. And so, Pritzker, if he's governor, is going to need money to work with. I mean, just the other day, the unpaid bill backlog was in the $6 billion range, which is a marked improvement over what it had been, but still, that bill backlog has to go down. They have to find some way to deal with the increasing, ever increasing amount that they have to lay out for pension costs. He's got to have money to get the state out of, this near junk bond rating status that we've been in for quite a while now.
And of course, infrastructure, all these other needs are out there as well. So we'll continue to follow that as well. Also, Paul Vallis, he announced this week he is going to take on not just Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, but the others who have already announced they're running for Chicago mayor. Vallis is the former Chicago schools chief. He ran unsuccessfully for governor and also lieutenant governor. So, Dave, Tony, you're up there. You're following the city and what's going on there. Does he have a chance in this race?
Oh, I think he has a chance. Although he's one of, I think he's the seventh candidate for Chicago mayor and counting. I don't think we're done seeing who else is going to start getting their signatures and trying to make the ballot for the mayor's race. I'm not counting Vallis out. I'm not counting anybody else out either. But, I think his message seems to be a little bit of what you played at the very top. The Rahm Emanuel's a bully, and shame on him for that. And I have the wherewithal and the knowledge of the city government's apparatus that I can take control of the finances here and right the ship that is the financial mess of the city of Chicago.
I mean, it seems with this many candidates that there's a pretty high likelihood that Rahm is looking, assuming he can prevail in some way and get a plurality here, but he's probably looking at another runoff, and it's just a question of who he's up against then. But this is sort of a classic play with so many opponents out there. They're all going to be splitting up the anti-Rahm universe, and you would think that would benefit him at least in the first stage of this, if that's what we do see, a runoff. But he has made finances here. If you're a city taxpayer, you hate it because you're paying more for water and property taxes and garbage collection and all those things. But we've seen some improvement in the city's finances over the last few years as a result of that. But of course the we've got the Laquan McDonald trial that could be playing out at the same time the campaign is running, and that's a big wild card. And it's hard to envision Emanuel losing all of this. I mean, I think he has to be regarded as the favorite. A guy like Vallis, where does he get money from? How do any of these opponents in a big field get enough money to get a strong enough platform where they can get their voice heard? That's the big question.
A lot of people may forget that Paul Vallis ran for governor, and actually a lot of people thought he was the guy to beat when Rod Blagojevich was able to pull out that Democratic primary win back in 2002. He was a bit of a golden boy at that point and a rising star in politics, but Charlie, has the luster gone off of him since?
I don't know if it has or not. I go back a really long ways with Paul Vallis. As a matter of fact, he's one of the people who was a mentor for me as a reporter when he was on the staff of the Senate Revenue Committee and helped educate me on revenues and tax structures and that kind of thing. And this was, Lord, this was probably 35 years ago. He got into trouble with the unions as head of the Chicago Public Schools, and so I don't think those hard feelings have been forgiven, although the teachers' union is not particularly happy with Mayor Emanuel either. The thing that struck me, though, is that Vallis says that he's not going to raise a lot of money. He'll have less money than anybody else. Didn't he also say he wasn't going to do TV, and he was just going to rely on being able to talk to the people about policy and have them respond to that?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if that happens.
Good luck.
I think he'll be running TV ads if he can afford it.
And for your guys' sake, I mean, in the city of Chicago, and you're closer to that. Is he? How's he viewed these days, or is he a guy whose time may have passed him?
Well, I mean, I think he was regarded as, you know, he had a stint over at Chicago State University and helped, you know, that university was on the verge of closing, and so he kind of was a bit of a lifeline to them. I think people regarded him positively there for the most part.
I don't know that he's got the biggest name recognition of this field of seven, but I do know that, to Charlie's point, he's got a history with the city and with the state, and I think he does have, you know, enough of a foundation to get a real campaign that has the potential to take off here, going in the next several months.
Well, here's a thought for someone interested in an alternate reality. What would the state of Illinois be like today had Paul Vallis beaten Rod Blagojevich back in 2002?
All right, and let's move on now for our notes from the field. Dave, let's start with you.
Well, I don't know. I went bargain hunting this past weekend and saw this ad for an estate sale here in Chicago that caught my eye. It was for the estate of former House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dan Rostenkowski on the northwest side of Chicago, and I paid a visit there over the weekend, and it was just interesting seeing all of the memorabilia there that existed. And I think one of my favorite takeaways is an autographed picture of the former Illinois Governor Otto Kerner, where he's it's a staff picture, but he's saying best wishes to you, Dan, and I've got it hanging in my office here.
All right, Charlie.
Well, while we're talking about historical artifacts, I have a note that goes back even further than Dan Rostenkowski. The Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum this week received a gift of a couple of passes handwritten by Abraham Lincoln to allow a mother and two sisters to visit prisoners of war at Fort Delaware, which was located on an island between Delaware and New Jersey, and it housed some 30,000 Confederate prisoners of war. And one of the guards at that facility acquired these passes, passed them on down through his family, until now they've become part of the collection of the Lincoln Museum.
All right, and that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler and from WBEZ, Tony Arnold and Dave McKinney. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.